All right, everyone, again, thank you very much for tuning in to the Deep End with Ed podcast.
The Deep End.
The Deep End.
The Deep End.
With Ed Robinson.
The Deep End.
I am joined today with Dr. Chelsea Hayward. She is a sports industry professional, does a bunch of things that we're going to find out a little bit later. A native of California. She is a graduate of Gar High School in the city of Cerritos. Received her bachelor's degree in Cal State from Cal State University, Long Beach, in psychology, and then also received her master's in sports management from Cal State, Long Beach. And then, if that wasn't enough, went on to get a doctorate in education, or doctorate in education in organizational change and leadership from the University of Southern California. You know, there's two USCs. There's the University of South Compton, commonly known as Compton College. I'm talking about the real USC off of Figueroa near downtown LA. And so we're going to just kind of just welcome you, Dr. Chelsea. Thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're all over the board. You do a lot of things, and we just want to just kind of plug. So I'm just a poor boy from Compton, like to just paint a picture, so to speak. Now, let's go back to your days at Gar High School. How would you describe yourself as a student at Gar?
Wow, I don't think I've been asked that question ever, at least maybe not in a long time. I think as a student, I was a really good student. I believe I could have been better knowing what I know now, just about what it means to apply yourself. But for what I knew at that time, I got a 3.5. I graduated with a 3.5, was great in classes, had all the arts, AP bio, like pretty well balanced as a student. And then also played sports, obviously. And so with that, my grades were better in season because I didn't have as much time to play with, but I ended up still doing pretty well for myself.
Okay, which sports did you play?
So I played volleyball and soccer.
So did you play for Coach Okamoto?
I did, Sonny Okamoto. There are still some of his phrases that to this day ring in my head.
I have a daughter who is a medical doctor who also went to Gar, and she played for Coach Okamoto.
Been there for 700 years.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about your upper education, your higher education. So you went on and you got a bachelor's in psychology, and then later on you got a master's in sports management. How did you segue into those areas?
I was just telling someone this story the other day, actually. I'm not really a planner. I think I'm very organized and responsible, but I'm not really a planner. But people see kind of the end result and imagine that I have this elaborate plan or I have this five-year plan. And that's not really the case. The way that I got there was just following my heart and my spirit. So the way that I ended up with my master's was my undergraduate last semester of college. I had a class, a sports appreciation class, that had two guest speakers that changed my life. One of them was Rob Wygod, who's the commissioner of the CIF Southern Section, that offered me my first internship, and then eventually it turned into a full-time job in sports. But the second speaker was Ayanna Welsh and Diane Higgs, who were coming to speak about the graduate program. And I was graduating a semester early and was like, well, I don't have anything else to do. I might as well just stay here. I like sports. Might as well get a master's while I'm here. So I stayed. Because that program, I was finishing in December, that program started in January. So long story short, I went to Africa in that small sort of 4 weeks that I had in between the two, and then went straight into the master's program. And then when I finished that, I was off for about 6 months when I realized it was harder to get a job in the industry than I had realized. I wasn't one of those people who got a job during the program. I had a bunch of internships, but not a full-time job. So then I decided I was going to move into sort of education space. I knew I wanted to teach one day, but I didn't know when, and figured I didn't have as many responsibilities, so might as well just do it now. So my grandmother at the time, who's best friends with my Titi Lana, who introduced us, my grandmother at the time, I was talking to her and I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna pay for it. Like, I don't even know if I need it right now. She was like, just apply. She's like, if you don't get in, then you never know. And I was like, okay, challenge accepted. So I applied, and then she's like, we'll figure everything else out later. So I applied, and the day I found out I was accepted, she had a stroke that she never recovered from. And that I think me, her, and my mom have this like spirit triangle where like three of us do lifetimes together. But following that, it just felt 1000% affirming that that was the pathway I needed to go down. So I accepted the offer and went through the program. And then, long story short, again, did my dissertation on improving the effectiveness of athlete activism, which has gotten me, again, just keep following that path into spaces that I had never imagined way back when I started the sports appreciation or the sport management program for my master's.
Okay. Wow. Thank you very much. And, you know, and Dr. Chelsea, you alluded to TT Lana, who is Lana Lauderdale, who connected us together, and I'm very grateful for that. She spoke very glowingly of you, and I understand why. You got to talk to her. You got to talk to her. So I'm glad that this is finally coming to fruition. And so you went on and you did your doctorate in education at the University of Southern California. And it's my understanding that you did it in organizational change in leadership. So my question is, what was your dissertation topic, and then what led you to that?
So I selected that program specifically because it was hybrid. So it was part online, part in person. And even though it's in Cerritos, or it was in LA and I'm in Cerritos, I didn't want to have to change my work schedule because I needed to pay for it. So I was like, I'll just do that. It was also the best decision ever. But the weekend we had to choose our dissertation topics was the weekend Trump called the NFL players SOBs. And I was just telling this story the other day also, but they told us to select something we had influence in and access to. And so that weekend, the group chats are going off of the guys trying to figure out how they're going to respond. And I'm like, what should my topic be? And it's like pinging in the side of my ear. And I'm like, turn my phone over. I'm like, what can I do? Like, and then eventually I put two and two together and realized, oh, I should study athlete activism. And so my title ended up being Improving the Effectiveness of Athlete Activism. And so the organization that I worked with on the was the Players Coalition, though we had to use a pseudonym for my dissertation.
Okay.
And the purpose was to both institute precedence in academia, because it wasn't something that was thoroughly studied up until I think 2016 or 2017 when I started it. And then once I realized that I was sort of in proximity to one of the catalysts for how sports would change, I really wanted to do that. And so my dissertation committee took a little convincing because there wasn't such a precedent in academia. They're like, you're gonna have a hard time finding stuff. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, but if I do it, then I can make it easier for the next person. It also cements my space here. And so again, just following what I was passionate about, my final defense was August 2019. May 2020, George Floyd was murdered, and it just opened the floodgates to athletes across leagues getting involved with this work. So the organization that I worked with, I work also for. And so we now work with athletes across 12 professional sports leagues, 19 colleges and universities. So that was the surmise of how that came to be.
So the academic panel, summarily, if I understood you correctly, they were trying to dissuade you not to do it because there was not a lot of research. What compelled you to press forward with courage?
That's a great question. I think just passion. I'm a very, very passionate person. So once I have my mindset on something, I don't understand how it could not come to be. Where there's a will, there's a way. And I feel like if there's a reason I want to do something, maybe God's put it on my heart. Maybe it's something that I just care about generally, but I like to think that it's tied to a bigger purpose. And so I just knew that that was what I wanted to do. And when I started, I think I actually did go through the process of looking at what else I could write about, and nothing moved me in the way that athlete activism did.
Okay. So when I think of athlete activism, I think of people like, I'm just trying things that come to my mind. I think of people like Muhammad Ali. I think about Jim Brown. I think about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar back in the day. I think about the late Bill Russell, who just passed away. I think about Megan, is it pronounced Rapone? Megan Rapone.
Rapino.
Rapone, thank you. Rapino?
Rapino. Mm-hmm.
Rapino, yeah. So I think about her, the soccer. I think about Naomi Osaka. I think about Simone Biles. I mean, there's just a couple of names that just kind of come to mind. So I'm saying all of that to say this. So I want to move to the leadership rubric as it relates to what you're doing today. So I know you are a leader at an organization called La Chica. Can you tell us a little bit about La Chica?
Yeah, so La Chica Sports and Entertainment Group is an all-female led sport management and athlete impact firm. So there's 9 of us there. And actually,
are you saying that I couldn't get a job there? the leadership.
I think legally I can't say that, but
I'm teasing. I got you.
I guess recognizing this theme of following your heart or following your passion, the way that I even got connected to them was Angela Chico was one of my professors in the sport management at Long Beach. And I recognized how rad she was and I wanted to stay connected with her. And so at the time I was doing social media. So I saw that she had a social page and said, hey, can I work with you? I see that you have a social page. Do you need any help running it? And she said, yes, but that she couldn't pay me. And that was fine. Like, I just wanted to be close to her and experience was going to be how I felt I was going to be paid. So I did that for a while. And then she ended up getting Antoine Bolden as one of her clients, who eventually became one of the co-founders with Malcolm Jenkins for Players Coalition. So through that, business has just grown immensely through the athlete impact space, but she's been doing this work for over 20 years. And what I think I'm most grateful about is we all work so well together. So like sort of my mom and grandma are, we have this like spirit triangle from a work spirit perspective. Myself, Angela, and the other woman on our leadership team, Rebecca Ferdet, have such a great working relationship that we just are able to move that much more quickly and efficiently because we understand each other so well. It's never about ego or judgment. Like, we just get each other. So again, another one of the best decisions that I think I've made just in following what I care about. But the Chica Sports and Entertainment also has additional clients such as Shield One Foundation, which is Drew Brees, Josh Norman, and Demario Davis's organization for eradicating poverty. And they're doing work in agriculture and food security in Buffalo and Minnesota. And then we have other athlete clients across other leagues, but we are going to London in the fall to do work around the Saints and Vikings game with the NFL, the teams, the NFL UK Foundation, and then one of our clients there. And so we are bringing students from Syracuse, San Diego State, and Long Beach State, because we're both also adjunct professors in the sport management program at Long Beach State. So bringing them in to see the behind the scenes of our world. All that to say, all the La Chica Sports Entertainment things really help me get up in the morning because I just love what I do. If I had a choice, this would be what I did for the rest of my life.
Okay. Now, before we delve further into the La Chica Sports and Entertainment, you said something earlier. You said that volunteering was kind of like your reciprocal pay, so to speak. Mm-hmm. What would you say to those individuals who may either be viewing this podcast or listening to it, especially those who might be in high school or college and they're on the cusp or whatever, but now everybody wants to get paid? What would you tell them about volunteering for externships or internships?
I think there's a balance. So I see the grit book in your bookshelf there, but I think definitely it's a balance between what you're going to hustle for and what's going to make ends meet. So you can't just forego all payment everywhere because still got to keep the lights on, still got to get fed, like whatever things you have financial obligations for, those need to be taken care of. But fortunately, I was in a position where I had found a bunch of different internships to make ends meet altogether. So I still had capacity to give to La Chica Sports. So once bare minimum was met, I knew that the value there was beyond anything I could receive financially. Being connected to Ange and being connected to the work that she does was much more valuable than anything I could have imagined. And now it's grown for me to supplement those financial needs and requirements so that I'm paid now, for the record. But in the beginning, especially as a student, so many people are open and willing to help you just because of that student title, that I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity. And if she said she couldn't pay me, then that's what it was. I knew that there was more value in that than I could get from whatever money she would give me. But I knew that I had to then supplement that elsewhere. And so because of that, she ended up being super flexible with my schedule. It wasn't like she was telling me I had to work 9 to 5 and couldn't pay me. It was when you can, however you can. But saying yes to things is how you open up pathways for yourself that you hadn't imagined, staying on God's plan. Because the things that I've said yes to have helped me realize what I do like, what I don't like, but more importantly, have helped me walk down the pathway of what matters most to me.
Okay. So Dr. Chelsea, you said that La Chica Sports and Entertainment is mm-hmm. 9 women that are leading the company. Mm-hmm. How much is that an aberration or an outlier to sports and sports entertainment, that company, that makeup of the leadership, 9 females?
I think biasly, I guess it's the only gender I've ever known, but I think that women are really good at getting things done. And so from where I sit, nine of us, just 9x's our capacity and our capabilities. And not to say that we don't work with men, we do work with men and we work well, very well with men, but there's something about that feminine energy exemplified when we're all together that just gives us the strength that we're all made up of. And so not to say that nine men couldn't run as strong of a company together, but there's both an assertiveness and a softness to the work that we bring that we're able to connect, especially in the sports world, to bring that balance to testosterone heavy locker rooms. We work with female athletes, but obviously NFL locker rooms tend to be pretty male dominated. So there's a balance that is brought about by us being all women. And I think a different perspective, the sports industry is pretty male heavy, especially when you get into these executive positions. And so what we bring is just that nice counterbalance to help people think of things they hadn't thought of in ways they hadn't thought of, and to bring about, again, just a little bit of a softness to this space. There's a lot of ego and pride and assertiveness, which is what we have as well. But bringing that aspect of what's missing to the table helps our work that much, helps our work accelerate that much more further.
Dr. Chelsea, tell us a little bit about, you alluded to it earlier, you talked about the Players Coalition. So tell us a little bit about what is that? I saw you work with several sports teams, including the Pittsburgh Steelers, but what is that about?
So Players Coalition is an organization of athlete activists, and essentially what we do is address systemic reform issues. It's kind of a niche, well, it's a very niche space where we've been able to leverage the platform of professional athletes for systemic change, which usually looks like legislative change. It could be resource equity, but we've helped change 26 laws across the country, get millions of dollars infused into school systems, into STEM programs. And then one of the bills in particular was in Boston that helped infuse $1.4 billion into the Boston public school system. And so what we've been able to do is essentially serve as an extension of our athletes' calendars, where we do all of the behind the scenes work to make it as turnkey as possible for them to get engaged, recognizing that once they come to the table, the work accelerates itself. So whether organizations are trying to get in front of a particular elected official, we can help that happen that much more quickly, bring about accountability to elected officials, help raise awareness for particular bills. I think the most important thing for us is that we're not reinventing the wheel. We're meeting in the middle where athletes have the platform, grassroots groups and subject matter experts have done sort of put it helps and uplift the work of those doing this day in and day out. And those that fans across criminal justice reform, police and community relations, education and economic advancement.
Wow, that's a mouthful, as they say. So Dr. Chelsea, when we think about that, I mean, you talk about a lot. So do you work with professional athletes only at La Chica, or do you work with college and high school students?
So we primarily work with professional, but in 2020, one of our athletes had a former teammate of theirs was a coach at the college level and said, is there anything I can do for my student athletes? And we're like, I'm sure as long as the university signed with it, we could. And so we offer the same services to them, let the university take more of a driver's seat just because of that protection of their college athletes, but essentially offering them the same services, whether it's putting together tweets for them, helping write an op-ed, or having them come participate in an event, submit testimony for a particular bill. There's a whole scale of what engagement looks like. And we're a free resource. So the way that Anquan and Malcolm designed it in the beginning was in getting funding from different sources, ensuring that the athletes had every opportunity to get involved without any barriers. So professional is where we started, specifically in the NFL, but having grown into other locker rooms, that professional connect players, coaches, or players, former teammates, or if they know a particular athlete, connecting with the university at that level. But more often than not, it's either a coach or an administrator in the athletic department that's sort of facilitating that relationship for them.
Okay, got you. And just so you know, Dr. Chelsea, don't let this shake your confidence or anything. Your frame is freezing a little bit, but I can hear you real clear. So So just keep going. Keep going. Okay. Don't do anything. Okay, so let's play that out. So I play for the Los Angeles Lakers. And I approach La Chica, or I don't know if La Chica approached me, but anyway, we enter into a partnership and I want to do XYZ for the city of Compton. How would that play out as an example at a high level? Yeah.
So if it's systemic related, it'll probably work through Players Coalition, which means it's a free resource. If it's for you and your personal foundation, that's something that you then work with LCSE group directly for. Okay. But if it's PC, then we figure out what you're passionate about. And so maybe this sort of passion thing is bigger than I realized in my own life, but there's enough work to go around that not everybody has to force anything. So if you care about hunger and homelessness in LA, if we can find something or find a group for you to connect with and then figure out what the action item is needed for you to make the change you want to see. And not to say that it'll happen overnight. There's sort of a low-hanging fruit where you can see little things, but then there's that long-term play for the change that will take a little bit more time. And then if it's something more on the foundation side, I also still figuring out where it is that you want to activate, and then we'll develop a game plan for what managing that looks like.
Okay. So continuing in that same vein, and I want to work with LCS, La Chica Sports Entertainment, and I want to either brand myself, I want to get better with my communication skills, media connection. Do you offer that type of service to professional athletes?
We don't directly. Most of our athletes have been in the league longer, so have that training already. We haven't come across any clients who've needed it, but we're pretty crafty and pretty experienced in this space. Like I said, collectively, actually, we have over 30 years of experience. If you take sort of my 9, 10, and then Angela and Rebecca's overlapping, actually it's about 40 years, I guess. But between the three of us and the rest of our group, we could definitely develop a media plan. And we work really closely with other sort of organizations. There's a group out of Jersey that does our content for Players Coalition, and that's something that I think we would probably lean in on them for, because they actually do offer that directly. And then we have other organizations, back to your earlier point, that work specifically with Black young professionals in the sports industry. And so we might refer to them. I think we're really, really big on collaboration. Like I said, this is a very ego-driven industry, but if everyone would work together more often, I think we could both advance the industry, but also take a lot of pressure off of the individuals here, because it's a very high-stakes space. And so that's something that we try to do, is build those bridges. So we would have an outlet and an answer for one way or the other.
Okay. All right, so I'm gonna say this, and I hope you don't take any umbrage or offense to this, but you look a little bit too young to be a college professor. So you're a college professor at Cal State Long Beach and at Morehouse College. Tell us a little bit about what you teach there and how does that role play?
Yeah, so also says my students, one of them last term who didn't realize she was on mute and said that out loud. I reminded her she was not mute, but the Long Beach program came up serendipitously. So when I defended my dissertation in August 2019, I had the executive director of our program on my dissertation committee. So upon my final defense, they said, okay, you pass. And then he said, also, we have this class and I want you to teach it. And so I was like, okay, I knew I wanted to teach one day. I didn't know it was tomorrow. So that started February 2020. So we were several weeks in, and then COVID happened. So I've only taught in person, I believe, 4 weeks. Okay. And then we went virtual. But since my program was hybrid, I knew virtual. I could break out anyone into groups, raise the hand, do a chat, like all the things. I was ready. So we ended up doing that. And that's twice a year for 8 weeks, 4 hours, once a night. So it is a graduate level program. So this is my, I'm in the program, I'm teaching right now, actually. So this is my sixth term teaching this. So 2020 was twice, 2021 was twice. This is my second for 2022. And then Morehouse came about January 2021. A colleague of ours, or someone that I work with closely through the NFL and through Players Coalition, also is a professor at Morehouse, oversees the Identity, Art, and Democracy Lab. He and I had developed a really good relationship together, and he said that he had a class similar to the one I was already teaching that he wanted me to teach. So started that January 2021. That was supposed to be in person, but then I think it was the Delta strain came out. So it was virtual. Then the next year, January 2022, also supposed to be in person, also was a new strain. So pushing for 2023 to get there in person, assuming COVID doesn't mutate somehow. But that program, it's for Long Beach, it's sport and US culture. And for Morehouse, it's sport, culture, and power. And so that one has a little bit more emphasis on the sort of underbelly of sports around why sports is so powerful, because it's a more intimate setting. The Long Beach program is more focused on getting students a job, essentially aspiring sports professionals. And so the Morehouse one is more academic. And that one, it fits into their, they have something called the J-Mester, which is a justice semester. So they take a full 15-week semester and cram it into the winter intersession. And so that one I've done twice, third time coming up, hopefully here in person this January.
So how did speaking of the pandemic, the Delta strain and COVID and others, how did that impact you in your professional trajectory, whether at La Chica or at the respective, you're talking about the schools, but how did they help your business?
It just accelerated things, actually. So I want to be sensitive to that because I recognize how much loss and devastation and heartache COVID caused. But it really accelerated me and my career because it brought access. So now we didn't need to fly everywhere to connect with people. We could connect with the Steelers in the morning and then connect with we could connect in Washington for the afternoon and then in the evening be in Jacksonville all virtually. And so what happened also, not for nothing, was I believe that the reason why America had this racial reckoning is because of COVID, because everyone was at home and had to sit in this trauma and had to sit in these feelings. You had nothing else but to figure it out. And so because we had this space, sports teams who didn't have games originally also had the space to figure this out. And so kicking off sort of our expansion post George Floyd in June of 2020, we had a call with over 400 NFL head coaches, executives, players talking about just what racism is. And that brought a lot of access and exposure to teams. And then through there, it was just sort of people connecting us with other teams, athletes, et cetera. Now we're back in person. And so travel has been kind of crazy because everyone kind of wants to be back in person. But it's good to get to know people again in person. So on that front, La Chica Sports has also been virtual since forever because most of our team is in San Diego. But once I came from LA, we have someone in Texas. It didn't necessarily make sense for us to all be in an office because of the travel, because everyone was somewhere else. So we've been virtual. And then I was actually with the CIF full time through May 2020. So when COVID happened in 2020, our offices went virtual and that lightened the load on our workload because there were no high school sports being played and the CIF Southern Section governs championships. So you can't have championships if you can't play regular season games. And then, May 2021, when things started opening back up, I had to make a decision and I followed my heart into the pro space, athlete activism, et cetera, and keeping still a really, really good relationship with my former office mates at the CIF, who I still hold very near and dear to my heart.
Okay, so let's get to the gritty stuff, so to speak.
Yeah.
So Colin Kaepernick, you know, he took a stand and I mean, he took a knee and so forth and all of the aftermath. This is just me on the outside looking in. It seems like it took a little while for some of the athletes to, so to speak, what do? Do I stand? Do I take a knee, et cetera, et cetera? What was your take on that whole thing?
How much time do you have?
Okay.
I think it was an interesting point because I was both studying this and it was happening in real life and I was working on it. So I have a very kind of unique perspective. I think that two things, I think the media played a really large role in how much exposure we had and what perception people had. So there was actually a lot of athletes still doing a lot of really good work that were kneeling, but whether or not it was focused on, meaning whether or not we knew about it, was another story. And part of that, not to blame media, but part of what happened with Players Coalition is that the guys had come under a lot of scrutiny because the NFL is one of our funders, rightfully so. We started with the NFL in that locker room. And in those locker rooms. And there was a lot of money given to, they dedicated $89 million to social justice causes, but that was interpreted as $89 million to Players Coalition. And then it was, why are these players taking this money? Well, first of all, not all the $89 million went to us directly. Second of all, the money was controversial because everyone was like, why would you take money from the NFL? It seems like a conflict of interest, but it was essentially unrestricted to do what the guys wanted to do. And so the argument was, if you're going to give me money to impact my communities, why would I, the way I want to, why would I not take it? But it caused a ton of headlines because drama and sites, clicks, viewership, broadcast, et cetera. These are for-profit companies, so they've got to make money somehow. And so all that to say, it discouraged the guys from speaking out publicly because of all the negativity and the drama. So they said, let's keep our heads down. Let's do the work. And that's what they did up until 2020. And so a lot of the work went unnoticed because there wasn't as much attention placed on it. And so there were media that were extremely, extremely supportive and doing as much as they could to like push out, but not having sort of those national syndicated headlines as coming through as heavily as some of the negative ones did, kept the work from being exposed. So 2020 happens, and now when athletes start showing up, you have groups like Black Players for Change doing all that they're doing in soccer, Black Women's Players Collective. And because it's on brand sort of with what's happening post George Floyd, a lot of the attention was brought back. And so it was like, well, how come nobody was doing anything before? And there were athletes doing things before. And so that's sort of my passion point, is giving them all the shine that they've been here. They were new, they were true to this, not new to this. And I think that's what I have to say about that.
And that's a very unique and a very helpful, instructive, insightful perspective. Thank you for that, Dr. Chelsea. So then we have this watershed moment, May 2020, George Floyd, it boom, the floodgates open. And now I see, again, this is just me on the outside looking in, it seems like there are more athletes that are willing to step up. What's your observation about that?
Definitely. This was definitely something that was dormant for a very long time. And not necessarily fully dormant, but at least, again, more behind the scenes. And so it was actually Ahmaud Arbery's murder first that spurred the sports world. And I think part of what happened there was obviously the national attention, but because he was running and because the tribute to him was to run the miles that, I think it was like 3.26 miles because his birthday was in March or something like that, or I forget that exact number. But because there was this sports tie and this physical association with this moment, it brought the sports world. And then George Floyd just exploded everything. Obviously, Breonna Taylor had a ton to do in that as well. So what happened in all of that space was there was just more emphasis. And I've just been so proud to see all of our athletes doing this level of work for so long.
Okay. And then, so what are you seeing now, 2022? Are you seeing more athletes, male and female alike, wanting to get involved? Or for instance, I'll give an example. It sounds to me that the ladies, I think that one, there was, I said her name earlier, Megan, and then there was Alex. I forgot Morgan. Alex's last name. Yes, Alex Morgan. Mm-hmm. It seemed like when they took on the World Soccer Group, I can't remember the name of it, and the pay equity, that was huge. I mean, but it was like a splash in the headlines, and then it went away. Can you? Yeah. Talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, so I guess to answer the first part of your question, I do think there are more athletes doing things. I do think it's a little bit less than it was at the peak of 2020, but there's still a lot that stayed and sustained the work and that are still very passionate about committing their lives to this work. And I think with the national or the U.S. women's soccer team, what happened in that space was essentially, the U.S. women's soccer team sued for equal pay to the U.S. men's soccer team. So not to be confused with the NWSL, which is the National Women's Soccer League, and the MLS, which is the men's league soccer. And I equate it with the U.S. soccer, the U.S. women's national soccer team is essentially Team USA, if we're relating it to basketball. And the NWSL is like the NBA, it's the league, versus the what's representing America when we go to the Olympics. But what happened was the U.S. women's national team sued for equal pay because they were playing more games, getting paid less, had lesser quality fields, resources, travel accommodations, but were winning more and winning World Cups and advancing in the World Cup. And so they had a really good documentary called LFG that explained all of the numbers behind this. And what happened was a judge essentially said, no, there was no precedence here because some of the women made more than some of the men did. And they appealed that and said, okay, you can't really equate that as equity across the leagues. And so they won on that appeal and essentially ended up getting millions in back pay from the US Soccer Federation that oversees both of the US men's and women's soccer team. And moving forward, their CBA will now, their collective bargaining agreement will now constitute equal pay. And so part of the argument on the federation side was, well, they signed the CBA, they were good with it, but they weren't presented the same opportunity for the CBA that the men had been. Had they known about it, they wouldn't have signed the one that they'd been given. So moving forward now, I believe there's supposed to be more transparency and more equity in that space in terms of like presenting the same deal, but they're definitely gonna have equal pay opportunities. But this now sets precedence for equal pay for women across leagues because there's now something you can point to as this is where we made it work. And I think that gets into Brittany Griner a little bit because she was in Russia because women's basketball players are paid more overseas than they were domestically. And part of the argument ends up being, well, broadcast rights, there's more viewership or it's more entertaining. And women's sports are actually growing year over year, 25% from an engagement level, at least on social media. So there's a lot of counter arguments to the common misconceptions people have. And I think what the U.S. women's national team did was just blow the lid off those arguments.
You just had a flood of things ruminating through my head. So so you were very gentle, very nice, and very professional about it. So what I heard you say is that the U.S. national women's soccer team, they had cruddy, messy stuff, fields, things like that. Didn't have all the things they needed to do, but they were winning. And then you had the men on this side who had all of the elite things, and they really weren't winning. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, not at the same caliber as the women.
Okay, got it. But the point is, and I'm glad that they stood up for that.
Yeah.
And then towards that end, you're reading my mind. I was talking to Michael Cooper, who used to play for the Lakers several years ago.
Yep.
And this is when he was coaching the Sparks. And he told me something. I had asked him a question. I said, why is it that as soon as the league is over for the WNBA, I read all these stories about women going to these European countries. And he told me, I don't remember offhand, Dr. Chelsea, but it was like at that point, I think this is like maybe 10 years ago. He said the average salary for the WNBA players was roughly about 40, 45,000 or something like that here. But he says that if they go elsewhere, they can get 10 times more. So he said some of his players, the very next day or a week later, they're jettison to European countries to do the things they need to do, which you were reading my mind because I was thinking about the Brittany Griner thing. And I know there's politics associated with it. To me, it just seems a travesty, you know, so young, a superstar, what have you. Do you know if there's anything happening on that front, i.e. from the sports world that they're trying to coalesce?
Not from what I can tell. I think part of the hard part, and this is outside looking in, I haven't been as closely involved in this. I do know that the WNBA Players Association has 3 full-time staff. And so sometimes brands get associated as being bigger because the brand is so big, but the actual office people doing the work, they're not that many. Like if you even think about just team sizes, team personnel sizes. If you think about the Lakers as a franchise, they're massive. The amount of people that are staffed by the team is way smaller than you would think. So I say that to say that there are a lot of people working very, very hard on this. And what's happened was, I think part of the hard part was the original strategy politically was to sort of not make too much noise, not ruffle too many feathers, which I believe outside looking in made sense because of that point in time where we were at the Russia-Ukraine war. Like it was so new, like trying to figure things out as safely as possible. But what that did was lose a lot of traction when people found out. So there wasn't an action item for people to get involved with immediately. And so though it stayed on the front of people's mind. And though there's been a lot of pressure placed, we lost a lot of that momentum for activating people. Superstar the like, superstar to just your common folks like you and me. But as far as I know, there are still a lot of people working really hard to get her out, and it is complicated for reasons I can't fully understand. But I do think that hopefully she's able to get home here soon. I know there have been sort of examples equated of if it was LeBron, he would have been out. Maybe, but it's not. So we've got to figure out what we can do with the current situation we're in. So I don't know too much there, but I'm hopeful that she will get home soon. It is definitely a travesty, and definitely something we've got to pay attention to keep our players safe. And to your point there, you could make four to five times now more overseas, and about 50% of the league goes overseas when their season's done. So you would think something like that would be a problem, but again, we've just got to figure out where to get the money to pay for them. And considering the level of engagement and the consumer appetite for women's sports, I think we're in a really good place to have those answers now.
Dr. Chelsea, I'm going to let you go in a little bit because you've been very kind. You alluded to the LFG documentary. Is that a public documentary that one could see on one of the streaming services?
Yes, it is on HBO Max. So the U.S. Women's National Team was recording their whole process in fighting for the equal pay. And then COVID happened, and then they lost, then a judge decided that it couldn't be tried. So it ends right when they have the date set for the new appeal, but it doesn't have the sort of win at the end post appeal, but it gives you all the information leading up to it around the arguments specific to women's soccer. So not necessarily women's sports in general, but specific to this case between the national team and the U.S. Soccer Federation. But really, really, really insightful. I have my students watch it.
So what advice would you give to a young person who may be viewing or listening to this podcast and he or she, they want to get involved in professional sports? What advice would you give them now, especially what you know now?
Yeah, I would say certainly reach out to folks, especially if you're a young person or a student, and play the student card. Say, hey, I'm a student. Can I get an informational interview with you just to learn more about your job, your day to day? And not necessarily having an ask of, can I have a job, or is it something you can hire me for? But just learn and attach yourself to people, because the networking piece is really important. And when I was going through the program, the networking piece was scary to me because I don't like the idea of like, hey, my name is Chelsea and this is what I do. I like the more organic one-on-one, let's talk and learn about each other. And that's still a form of networking, but it took me a long time to realize that. So you don't have to be that person. That's just, and maybe if you are an extrovert in that way, go for it. I'm not. So for me, what worked was sort of more one-on-one connections and building that over time. And so like with Angela, like with some of these other spaces that I've been in, it's just been a slow process, but they started with that outreach. And I would say reach out to me if you want. Like, I'm very passionate about helping students, helping the next group of young professionals. I think at least if I have a say in how we're shaping the industry, then we can be better off as an industry if we keep sharing all of those best practices amongst ourselves. And then the graduate program in sport management is maybe not everyone's cup of tea. It's hit or miss for some folks. For me, I knocked it out of the park because I applied myself. I did all the internships I could, so I knew, again, what I did like and what I didn't like. And part of what's integral to that program is that they require a certain amount of internship hours. And then they give you the access to opportunities so that you're put in front of internships you can apply for. So that worked really well to get your foot in the door, learn about the industry, meet people, and then hopefully land a full-time job. But like I said, it didn't work for me directly in the program, but eventually after I did get that full-time space. So those would probably be the three things I recommend. Reach out to people for an information interview. LinkedIn is great. People are open to receiving information or outreach from there. Reach out to me and then apply to the program at Long Beach as a shameless plug.
Okay. And Dr. Chelsea, I've seen you in several vignettes, several videos, and I noticed you wear your hair different ways and what have you. And I thought I saw something about natural hair or something or whatever. Are you familiar with the Crown Act in California that was passed?
So I am, actually.
What's your thoughts? How does that overlay in sports? I don't know if that's an issue or whatever.
So I grew up in Cerritos, which is predominantly Asian. So for me growing up until a certain age, I'd say like elementary school when all of these sort of ideas are formed, it was never about black or white. It was not Asian. So I never had an issue being fully myself because I knew I was never going to be Asian. So like if I couldn't play with someone because I wasn't Korean or whatever little kid like things, and not that it was like totally astronomically an issue, just kid things. But for me, I never had that issue. And so I did straighten my hair until through college, actually. And then my mom said she wasn't going to pay for it anymore. So I went natural because naturally I didn't want to pay for myself. Uh-huh. And so braids is actually my go-to because I have a lot of hair and don't like to do it all the time. But showing up as the full version of myself wasn't ever a challenge as a child. So when I grew up and had to, it was more learning through other people that they were like, oh, you're wearing braids to work, or oh, your hair's not straight. I was like, people say that to you? Like, no one had approached me in that way. And I don't know if it's because I'm also 6 feet tall, so it was a little bit scary to come tell me to do something. But I hadn't had those issues as much growing up. And so it was more learning from others that was an issue. And I say, embrace it, because unless you're gonna come do my hair, I don't hear it.
I love it. And let me just say a little footnote for those of you not familiar with the Crown Act. It was passed, I believe, a year and a half ago. And it has to do with, I know, California companies where the state legislator summarily passed a bill that says you can't discriminate against a person because of the way they wear their hair, especially in the workforce. Okay, so Dr. Chelsea, we're getting ready to land a plane. I want to do a little bit of this or that. And yeah. So I'm going to give you two words and you just kind of pick which one to work for you, all right?
Okay.
So Cerritos or Martha's Vineyard?
Man, actually, I was in Martha's Vineyard 2 weeks ago and met a woman from Cerritos and we like nerded out over Cerritos. If I'm vacationing, it's Martha's Vineyard. If I'm living, it's Cerritos.
Okay. The WNBA or the NBA?
I'm going to have to stick with my women here and say WNBA.
Okay. UCLA or USC?
So I worked at UCLA and then I went to USC, but I'm gonna say fight on.
Okay. An afro or pressed hair?
An afro, for sure. Because if you press it and you go up for me, if I press it and I go outside, it's gonna be an afro anyway.
Okay. And then lastly, a sports player or an owner of a company, of a sports franchise?
I feel like a sports player.
Okay. All right. And then finally, if individuals want to connect with you socially, how can they connect with you?
Probably LinkedIn. I don't actually have social. So okay. LinkedIn is the best place to find me.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Chelsea, is there anything else before we drop off?
I don't think so. I'm just really excited for the platform that you're giving folks to share all this knowledge.
Well, I just want to say to you, to me, and on behalf of me and my team and my staff that does the Deep End with Ed podcast, thank you very much for the just a great, inspiring story and the multitude of information that you shared with us, especially in the work that you're doing. And I wish you and the other eight colleagues at La Chica Sports Entertainment the very best and all of the other things that you're doing. So we will definitely stay in contact with you. And as always, my listening audience, you always know I like to give you a coachable moment. So your coachable moment is this week. I want you to stand up for something. I want you to become an activist, whether it's in your home, whether it's in your community, whether it's at your school, your sports team, your ministry. I want you to take a stand for someone. And then secondly, I want you to feel free to go to LinkedIn and look up Dr. Chelsea Hayward, H-E-Y-W-A-R-D, and you'll see it her name on the feed also.